Blog Talk Radio.
I married Isis on the 5th day of May, but I could not hold on to her very long, so I cut off. I rode straight away for the wild unknown country where I could not go wrong. I came to a high place of darkness and light. The dividing line ran through the center of town. I hitched up my pony to a post on the right. Went into a laundry to wash my clothes. Approached me for a match. I knew right away he was not ordinary. He said, "Are you looking for something easy to catch?" Said, "I got no money." He said, "That ain't necessary." We set out that night for the cold. I gave him my blanket and he gave me his word. I said, "Where are we going?" He said, "We'll be back by the 4th. I said, "That's the best news that I've ever heard." I was thinking about turquoise, I was thinking about gold, I was thinking about diamonds and the world's biggest necklace, as we rode through the canyons, through the devilish cold. I was thinking about ISIS, as I thought I was so reckless. As you told me that one day we would meet up again, and things would be different the next time we were. If I only could I hang on and just be her friend. I still can't remember all the best things she said. We came to the pyramids all embedded in ice. He said, "There's a body I'm trying to find. If I carry it out, it'll bring a good price." 'Twas the thing that I knew what he had on his mind. The wind, it was a howling, and the snow was outrageous. We chopped through the night and we chopped through the dawn. I was hoping that it wasn't contagious, but I made up my mind that I had to go on. I broke into the tomb, but the casket was empty. There was no jewels, no nothing. I felt I'd been had when I saw was just being friendly. When I took up his offer, I must have been mad. Inside, threw him down in the hole, and I put back the cover. I said a quick prayer, and I felt satisfied. Then I rode back to find Isis, just to tell her I love her.
the creek used to rise. Blinded by sleep and in need of a bed, I came in from the east with the sun in my eyes. I cursed it one time, then I rode on ahead. I said, no place special. She said, you look different. I said, well, I guess. She said, you've been gone. I said, that's only natural. She said, you're gonna stay. I said, if you want me to, yeah.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. My name is Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Tonight is an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut porn or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult content. If you do find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry. Something for everyone's taste. Also, make sure to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. Now, most of tonight's writes are inspired, as you might have been able to tell from the intro song, by the lyrics of Bob Dylan's Icy's. And we also do have some carryovers, too, from other shows. So I'm definitely looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
Good evening.
Awesome. Very cool. Very cool. Good evening to you. I have to say, you know, it's like I said in Late Night Poetry Room, you know, I know Bob Dylan has that unique voice and not everybody's a fan of his singing. But, you know, I just think he's a wonderful lyricist, and I love that sound of the harmonica. And, you know, a lot of times you can have an intro song and you can, only play part of it if it's particularly long. But because this song, and really a lot of his songs, tend to tell stories, there's just not a part that I felt I could stop it at. Other than to, like, just let the whole 6-minute and 59-second song play out. and I'd like to welcome Randy and Tom. Hi, Randy. Hi, Tom. Glad you could both join us.
Hello.
Tom, how you doing?
I'm good. And you, Rick?
Excellent. Thank you.
And Randy, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. How are you guys this
Randy,
morning,
good
I guess,
to hear your voice,
for you?
Man.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been a while.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It is great to be hearing you again. And I know neither one of you can stay very long because I understand, you know, needing to get some of that sleep. I hear it's precious stuff, or so they say. All right. So what do you got for us first, Rex?
I got Tom's on the board right now.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, this one's called Wisdom Comes Too Late. A man walked in as I walked out. Stop to tell me about... Oops. Sorry, my phone fell over. Let me start that again. A man walked in as I walked out. Stop to tell me what the truth was about. Was he a preacher, a prophet of truth? Was he a bandit looking for loot? He swore he wasn't seeking to scam, nor was he a thief, now on the lam. Oh, where am I? Now on the lam. He was a speaker looking for others he wanted to stand in the sun, brothers who together would find the right one. Walk with me and we will know the light. Walk with me and we will rise above the fight. Peace is a question in the heart of the soul. How we will answer will tell. What we will be the toll. So here is the adventure. Here is the crime. Are you ready to discover how to open your mind? Long is the avenue, long is the night. Divine is the answer for those who learn what is right. They say there are gods that travel the earth. They seek humans who know what life is worth. Be they strangers starving on the doorstep or enchanted magicians writing with the truth. They will come into your life and turn over each stone. They will steal into your sense of wonder and never atone for the damage they do as they see the state of your soul, for God do not have to answer for their goal. There was a woman I loved for all the women I've known, a woman who understood my every mind. Moods are shallow, character deep, one who knows yours is someone to keep. The stranger turned at the door, looked into my heart and asked, what did you leave her for? On these nights when you're lonely, on these days even more, when the song in your heart aches, you feel empty and old, who do you long for and who is the person who knows your soul? I thank this God I met at the barroom door. I thank thy heart for finding what I lived for. It's time to get straight, time to do right. Time has come for me to divine love. Time to share my mind with the woman I know who should share my life. Turned again and headed for the door. It's right for me to make sure she knows I have a love that's true. I will make her happy with everything I do. Calling on my phone, adding right. I know I had to do the right thing and make sure her heart heard, too. All that I had to tell so she would know I loved her well. I got to the door and knocked loud enough for her to tell that someone had come as fast as could be. That someone? Me. This is when the truth is hard to believe. She had not betrayed. She had just not waited for me. She married another guy. He was the one who answered the door. All I could do was say, bye. Now, I don't tell a lie. At first, I thought I was going to die. Then I realized she was wise and I was the foolish guy. I didn't know what love was and I let the lady fly. I didn't know my own heart, so I was living a lie. If life goes to the wise, I was the fool. I tried to be cool, and all I succeeded in doing was being a total tool. Better to learn who you are and what your heart is about before you start playing about who you use and who you love. End poem.
Bravo, Tom. That was an amazing read and write, and I am so glad that you called in to read it yourself, because you just knew the right tone, the right pause, pitch, and punch to use. So very, very cool. And let's go ahead and get your comments And Randy, your thoughts on Tom's home?
Well, it was very intriguing. It draws you in with every line. I really liked it. I liked when the song "In Your Heart Aches," you feel empty and old. Who do you long for? And who is the person who knows your soul? And I like the last stanza.
Thank you.
Pick out part of it. I didn't know what love was, and I let my lady fly. I didn't know my own heart, so I was living a lie. This was a very intriguing poem, and I agree with Pam. Your read was wonderful, and I really liked it.
Oh, thank you.
Great comment, Randy. And Rex, your thoughts?
Story, and it runs that that tone of kind of the folk song from way back when, what Dylan was originally into at the outside, which you kept going on with, but also like Woody Guthrie's put out. And there's a kind of a note to a moral in the story that runs through it, because it hits on that note of not knowing or taking for granted that which you think would always be there, but not understanding the truth behind the voice itself. Sometimes the weight comes at your own expense, because when you realize that which you have as opposed to that which you think you want, you find the weight has walked itself out the door on another vein, because the weight isn't something she is willing to do, and taking advantage of that situation, not understanding yourself totally, is what the angle is in this. And it's kind of like when you open this up, you're walking out the door, and the thought of men walking in was maybe a smarter section of yourself later in life, offering up a little tidbit of truth to that which you should stand for. And when, once you got the message, it was a bit too late, but maybe that's the message you needed right then and there, so you could actually equate where you want to go with your life after this.
Well said.
Very well said there, Rex. Great observation. I liked how you brought up, and I agree that this very much kind of has that folk song feel. I felt like it really fit well with the Bob Dylan song, you know, that you had that whole thought of a story that tells a moral, and really nice natural flowing rhyme in here that I really appreciate on a technical level. And I like how this is that journey of a man learning about love, about life, and about himself, I really like, calling on the phone ain't right. I knew I had to do the right thing and make sure her heart heard too, all that I had to tell so the world knows I loved her well. You know, I like how you describe, there's a sense of anticipation in realizing that, you know, the phone isn't the right thing, that it has to be said and done in person. And I also like where in the middle you say, when the song in your heart aches, you feel empty and old, who do you long for, and who is the person who knows your soul? I thank this God I met at the barroom door. I thank my heart for finding that I live for. You know, you never can tell in life when that spiritual, that beautiful, that learning moment will come to you. And so just really a wonderful write all the way through, and very well done. And was there anything you wanted to say about your write, Tom?
Oh, nothing in particular. I really tried to sort of catch the, in Dylan, there's always this sort of a level of the story and the meaning you're trying to get across, but also a certain level of cynicism and humor. And particularly in the first couple of verses, I really tried to catch that, you know, with the, was he a preacher, a prophet of truth, or was he a bandit looking for loot? You know, the whole, how do you know the person who's coming up on you is really going to be the person you want to meet? Which is something Dylan always sort of brings up if he's up and think about it, you know. from his classic, which was also 6 minutes. I can remember Like a Rolling Stone just floored the world because he broke the 3 minute bind. You know, you weren't supposed to have your songs go for more than 3 minutes. And there were DJs who really didn't know whether they should play it for the full 6 minutes. They had them all freaked out.
Right? Right. Cool bit of information there. And all right, Rex, what do you got for us next? Did Rex drop? Oh, he did drop. Well, you know what? I see, Randy, that he has your poem up, so you go ahead and start reading, and I'll be back with Rex.
Okay. Yeah, this being a Dylan song, I always hesitate a little bit to try to do anything off a master like Dylan, because I don't want to embarrass myself, but I try to be careful with this. And my poem is Isis. I married Isis despite her not being the marrying type. We quickly knew it was a mistake. Soon parting ways. California's call was drawing me, and I bought its hype. And traveling minus Isis into the unknown, I did stray. Finally reaching a small town, it was well into the night. Only one place was open, so I carefully entered slowly. An old man sat alone. I struck a match and lit his pipe. It all seemed so surreal, kind of spooky and a bit unholy. The old man said, "Come with me. I'll share my treasure." My thoughts soon ran to gold, but then quickly to Isis and how it might impress her. Well beyond my measure, the old man and I moved on, hoping to avoid any crisis. Weathering many difficulties, we finally found his gold. I took my share and proceeded to make my way back, to find my goddess Isis, offering my love as yet untold, with a sincere emotion, which before I seemed to lack. She met me with a question, "Oh, where have you been?" I answered, seeking riches in the wild and its devices to prove my devotion and returning to you once again. My lost treasure and most alluring mystical child, Isis, and poem.
Great read, Randy. I have to say it's just absolutely wonderful to be hearing you again and to see your writing again. So very cool. And let's go ahead and get you some comments. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I have to totally agree with you. Trying to do anything in Dylan's style is like taking your own life into your own hands. You're dealing with a master. I don't know about you, but I'm sure I'm not. But I like what you did with this, which is you took the creation of Isis and or Isis and turned it into sort of your own tale of finding yourself and finding your way and coming back to show that you were worthy of her. And that's a sharp little tale. And I like the characters you used in it. Very well done.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well said there, Tom. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like Tom's thoughts there. They work out real well. It also hits. There's a nice touch to this being not just about the traveler, so to speak, but also the it works on the thought to not just being worthy, but producing those riches to lay at her feet, Egyptian style, because you use that picture up front. As a little guiding image, and there's a power in the note to worship, and the worship here is not just to her as the mother of all things, the one, the marrying type, but also the worship to the angle of wanting to give everything, and in order to do that, you've got to make yourself, as Tom put it, worthy by seeking that which she might need. But then the question down the back end asking, where have you been, kind of hits on that note that, I don't have need of all those riches, so to speak. I have need of a good man to show me something more than just the frilly and the glittering that comes with that love, or the love should be there without all the glittering notions to begin with.
Thanks, Rex.
You're welcome.
Bravo. I think that was a wonderful comment there, Rex. I really like, as I said, wonderful rhyme and flow. I do like that you use the picture of the goddess Isis, and there's this kind of idea of seeking, you know, that there is that idea of seeking treasure to put at your beloved feet. And I like that this has a storyline. You know, very, very Dylan-esque. I don't know if Dylan-esque is a word, but it is now. I'm inventing words as we go along. I really like the line, "It all seems so surreal, kind of spooky and a bit unholy." I think that makes for like that kind of intense feeling of that moment, that turning point in a poem, in a story. And I too like where it says at the end, "She met me with a question of where have you been?" Like all along, he was seeking these riches, and all along, all she wanted was him. And I like at the end that you say the reference to her, the man, is my lost treasure and most alluring mystical child, Isis. Just really a phenomenal write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And, yeah, absolutely. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Let's celebrate diversity by Eric Svensson, and you have a SoundCloud for this one.
Yes, and now we're going into carryovers from Into the Darkness, and we do have a SoundCloud for this one. So let me find that, and here we go.
Let's celebrate diversity, latitude, and longitude of creative minds, ingenuity that defies magnetic anomalies. An artist hitches a ride upon northern lights, hopscotch, hoppity hop, gateway to the stars traverse with each digital impression. Effleurage fuels, frisk, dark, dank, inner recesses, lymph drainage of metastasized minds. Let's celebrate diversity. Lunar octopus lady hitches a ride. New moon sliver becomes a fish. Piggybacks a wide-eyed dame through a lunascape. Sheer delight of tentacle-toes Twitter-tweet, translation of a lover's dream. Little mouth beholds a heart-shaped sweet. Sweet for my sweet, sugar for my honey, your tasty kiss thrills me so. Sweet for my sweet, sugar for my honey, I'll never ever let you go. Sugar for my honey. Let's celebrate diversity. Hitch a ride on Northern Lights elevator. Somersault through domed stratosphere. Seek out wondrous, wiggly galactic denizens. Aquarian age places technology in our laps. Immersion in digital art aids neuron pathways. If you wanted that star that shines so brightly to match the stardust in your eyes, darling, I would chase that bright star nightly and try to steal it from the skies. Singed synapses go on holiday. Beyond grave gravity, a delightful spacewalk awaits. Gnomes, goblins, and glorious Star Trek domes. We've certainly progressed from suave James Bond's juggle jiggle with Maud Adams in Octopussy. Come, comrades, take a leap of faith. digital art is the new all-time high. Behold intuitive inkjet squirt curved creative masterpieces. Anyways, who decided there's a man on the moon when it's a zany zeitgeist octopussy on a sugar rush? End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the sound cloud. It is very much appreciated. I have to say, I just found this absolutely delightful. Such a fun, smile-inducing write. This was originally written for The Dark Show, and I saved it for this show because I didn't find this to be a particularly dark write, which was absolutely fine because the artwork that we presented up as prompts definitely were kind of on the borderline. Like you could get darkness from them, but you could get other emotions and thoughts. And I felt like that's what Eric did, and he did it very well. And before we continue with commenting, I'd like to welcome Babbler to the show. Welcome, Babbler. Glad you could join us.
Hey. Hey, everyone.
Hey, Babbler.
And are you surviving that horrible weather you got going on?
Yes and no. I'm okay.
The house is
two houses down the street from me, three houses down the street from me. They're completely flooded, and a lot of my friends and family are dislocated.
Right.
I'm okay.
Oh, my goodness. I'm glad you're okay. And I'll be trying to send out positive energy for, you know, everyone who needs it.
But thank you.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I definitely understand that. All right, well, let's go ahead and start with your thoughts, Rex.
It's a quirky, fun piece. It's got, not to mention the James Bond angle with the octopus, the Mort Adams down the bottom, but also a kind of noted touch to Star Trek and Star Wars with the playful antics with the different thoughts to that little picture itself. I like, where was it? Sheer delight of tentacle toes, Twitter tweet. I like that. Sweet to my sweet sugar for my honey, your tasty kiss thrills me so. Sweet to my sweet sugar for my honey, I'll never ever let you go, sugar for my honey. And the thought with the diversity is letting everybody pick on their own thoughts as to what they consider their angle to love. And you know what? Behold it as it is. Nobody else should interfere.
Absolutely. Very well said there, Rex. I have to agree. And Babbler, your thoughts.
I really enjoyed this. For me, it felt like an exploration in creativity. You know, that opening line, ingenuity defies magnetic anomalies. An artist hitches a ride upon the northern lights. Hopscotch, hoppity scotch. It's just kind of like a mental exploration and places that art can take you is what I'm getting from it. And then just talking about, shedding off expectations and well-worn tropes and the things that people expect to see in exchange for the unexpected and true creativity and true innovation, without, escaping a framework, which I really enjoyed. And I like that it touches, upon faith and that kind of thing is like being otherworldly and getting out, but also about digital art, about moving away from even just limiting yourself on what media you're going to use. You're not even limited by what you can create with. There's so many options out there. So I really enjoyed this. I loved the flow of it. It had a really kind of fun, it was fun to say and speak and kind of explore the words as you go through. There was also an interesting musicality to it, especially with the sweets for my sweet, sugar for my honey. It almost sounds like a piece from a song, you know, it sounds like lyrics right there. So I really enjoyed it. I thought this was, it was fun, and it was creative and a little bouncier, if that makes sense, than what I feel like I typically read from Eric. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was fun.
Absolutely.
A fun bit on creativity.
Yeah.
So
I like that you call this an exploration of creativity. And that one part does remind me of that song. I think it was like from the 1950s. I went, sugar pie, honey bun, you know that I love you. And I think that's the one. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But excellent comment there, and definitely a bouncy write with, that has a great kind of, like you said, musicality to it. And Tom, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree a lot with what Bab had to say, because he starts with this sort of like, I'm going to go exploring all the things that creative minds are doing these days. As we take on space and all the incredible things that are going on, even though at the same time he throws in this effleurage fuels, which is a massage technique used in Swedish massage. Chris Stark intercesses. He has a tendency to pick up these little things that are sort of like little curveballs and throw them into the mix. And talking about how once we get excited, how we change. And so he goes, in that lymph drainage of metastasized minds, let's celebrate diversity. And he gives us one version of who this possible picture could be and turns it into a love poem with that sweet for my sweet. And then a love song, in a sense. And then he goes, let's celebrate diversity again. And he starts talking about digital art and the way technology has changed the way we see things and do things. And then leaps into James Bond and the whole thing of Octopussy. And finally, in the last verse, it's like, he comes down to almost like saying, come, you know, when he goes, come comrade, take a leap of faith. Digital art is the new all-time high. As if art has always been about entertainment that lifts us up and beyond what we're used to doing, lifts us up and beyond our ruts and our thinking. And he just goes, behold. And finishes with that last line, which sort of really is impressive last line, because it kind of snatches from each section when it's a zany zeitgeist Octopussy on a sugar rush. I just thought this one was one where he really allowed his sense of humor and his vast understanding of the art world just take off and have a whole lot of with the picture and all that it represented in his mind of the way things have changed.
Absolutely. I have to agree. He did have a wonderful sense of humor in this. I love the alliteration, how you can tell that he had fun with the phrasing. As Rex mentioned, and you mentioned the references to James Bond, Octopussy. I like how he does talk about the digital art, immersion in digital art, AIDS, neuron pathways. And to me, there's really, within that part and the end, there's really this whole idea of growth in thinking, of how, you know, art is and mankind's thinking are both meant to evolve. I like where he says at the end, come comrades, take a leap of faith. And anyways, who decided there's a man on the moon, so zany's like just Octopussy on a sugar rush? You know, like, I like how by ending it with a question, it's almost like the whole idea of who decides what's right and what's wrong. You know, who decides for everybody? No, nobody does. Everyone to think for themselves and come to their own conclusions. And they said it was great fun that he had that stanza, sweets for my sweet, sugar for my honey, right in the middle of all that. Like just a celebration of love and a celebration of the sweetness of life. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, what do you got for us next? Got that. All right. So up next we have The Dark Presence Calls by Slipka Kalita, and it goes like this. Listen, the grisly predator is rumbling, adorned in the enigmatic attire of death in disguise, wheezing, thou can't escape from my vicious labyrinth. Let the darkness fall, an incarnation of werewolf. The nocturnal presence will sting, will emit toxin venom, will devour all the vigor to make thou lunatic's hitherto deluded graveyard will be thine faithful companion. The lurking ghastly image imperturbed by thy mundane babbling, murmuring proud not friend of thine valor, my presence, thy absolute reality. Silhouette will push thee in my inescapable murky quagmire of sensuous evil. Thou can't escape from my sorcery. Thy ephemeral identity will mingle in the mist of obscurity. In digging the dark, morbid morass to entrap and play with thine vulgar existence, bedazzled thou can't escape the fatal flies enchanting camouflage clutches. Is waiting to suck blood eagerly. Listen, it's again gurgling. Let's play the beguile game of predator and prey. Thou will love my lucrative dungeon of lethal virus. Me no longer the earthly epitaph will be thy destined entity. End poem. Oh, a wonderful use of language there. And Babbler, your thoughts?
Well, I really enjoyed this. It almost felt like reading a fantasy novel, like the use of language and conversation, like the use of dialogue, I found really fascinating. You know, on the third line, wheezing, thou can't escape from my vicious labyrinth. You know, it launched into a conversation that I found really fascinating. And then to find that it's almost like a conversation with death, you know, and about, I don't know, it almost felt like it was about COVID to me, with the end being like the lucrative dungeon of lethal virus. You no longer be earthly epitaph will be thy destined entity. I don't know, it felt very kind of morbid, gothic high fantasy to me. It was a fun read. It felt like an excerpt from like a novel. So I really enjoyed the write. I thought it was fun, like the dark luring of death.
Absolutely. I like what you're saying. It does feel like an excerpt from a novel. You know, it was really intriguing, the different use of language. And, you know, isn't it interesting how COVID, that these past couple of years have totally changed the way we interpret and see when somebody uses a virus in a poem. Like 3 years ago, we would have been thinking like Black Death Plague or something, you know, or something totally sci-fi, you know. And now it's, you know, automatically, because I had the same thought, that you just automatically think of COVID, you know, and, yeah, I thought this was just a really wonderful dark tale. And it's also interesting to me how there's kind of almost this offering of sensual allurement, being offered up. Thou will love my lucrative dungeon of lethal virus. It's interesting to me the mixture between, you know, offering up something and blatantly having it be death. I also like murmuring, proud not friend of thine valor, my presence, my absolute reality. Pride cometh, as they say, pride cometh before the fall, and I like how this touches on that idea that, this person is taking too much pride in their own works when, like anybody else, they're going to meet death. So just a really wonderful dark rite and very well done. All right, and before we continue on, I know Rex is a babysitting and the little monsters were having a shit fit, but let's check to see if he's back. Are you back, Rex?
No.
Okay. Well,
yeah, I'm here.
I know. Would you like to comment on this poem? Are we able to read it?
Yeah, it's the weaving of magic and playing with things that you don't know what you're playing with, and that which comes out of that essence as you weave the dark essences, they come back free fold to give you that much more of its inequity, so to speak. And it is never pretty, it's never sweet. And it also hits on that notion of those who play God are oft found to be bent dining on that which they have endeavored into.
I like that thought. I like that thought. Very well said there. Some people definitely delve into more than they can take on, that's for sure. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Funeral for a Muse by Babbler.
Are you still with us, Babbler? Yep. Are you on mute?
I am. I just was fumbling around with my phone trying to get off of mute. I didn't say anything important, and I was more like just going, while trying to get there. Okay. So this is Funeral for a Muse. Fingers slide through six strands of hair, teasing the curls, mouthing prayers into crescent ears. Touching skin, paler than nightshade, praising breasts and moss-freckled eyes, cupping chins that curve into letters. Watercolor flecks spray across eyelids, a piece for a gallery, spotlighted against whitewash. Corners of lips suspended by harp string laughter embossed in the diary. Stone pathways ascending to a temple deaf to prayer, sipping at edges, spilling across an altar, born on an inauspicious day. Sunbeams prisoner, starlight laudanum drunk, amethyst twinkles in 2 o'clock frown lines sculpted by a sea of sand, beating at the edges, carving valleys for a song, screaming in silence, breathing, but long dead. End poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Babbler. I'm really glad you were able to call in. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
All right. I like the little dark touches you've got rolling in here. Through six strands of hair, that kind of gives off a notion that that's all you've got. There's the dark in there. But I also like the second stanza, paler than nightshade. There's a nice touch to a death itself. But the way you finish this was kind of a nice note. Sunbeams prisoner, starlight lord and undrunk, amethyst twinkles in 2 o'clock brown lines, sculpted by a sea of sand beating at the edges, carving valleys for a song. There's that nice notion of sleeplessness that walks within that. And the laudanum drunk I love that line because it kind of hits on that notion of understanding, knowing the dark and looking for that little touch of twinkle that comes with moonlight and where things crawl into the mind at night. But when you finish out screaming in silence, breathing but long dead, there is that notion of being a little pissed at oneself because nothing is coming and the arena is such a nice note and tone in it at the moment that you thought, how can I not have something give birth in this particular moment? It kind of hits on that note of illusion, just sitting on the edges, but can't quite grasp the notion.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like that. Really great observations, Rex. I have to agree that Starlight Landon and Drunk, Amethyst Twinkles, you know, it was a really great line. And, yeah, it did have that kind of, I have to agree that I liked your observation, but I had that kind of thought of seeking the light in the darkness. And that I really like this all the way through. Mouthing prayers in the crescent ears, touching skin paler than nightshade, praising breath and moss freckled eyes, cupping chins that curve into letters. There's almost this idea of trying to seduce the muse into working. I also like by harp string laughter embossed in a diary. There's kind of this whole, to me, idea of laying oneself out completely, a bearing of the soul. And heels click up stone pathways ascending to a temple deaf to prayer. I like how this becomes almost like a personal journey and then a kind of a sense of self-realization that the work you're putting into that the woman is putting into this ascending to this temple realizes that this temple is deaf to what she needs, what her prayers are. It also, with the heels clicking, has a whole really kind of Wizard of Oz type feel. Like there's this kind of seeking, this looking to go back. And screaming in silence, breathing but long dead, I thought was a really powerful ending in the idea that there's almost this emotional death, this death to self, you know, this struggle to be heard and to find your own voice. Just absolutely a beautiful, thought-provoking write and very well done. And was there anything that you'd like to say about your right, Gabler?
Sure. I think Rex kind of touched upon it. It's really kind of begging for inspiration. You know, it's 2 o'clock in the night. It's gorgeous night. Listening to music, which is really what the six strands of hair are. You know, music is a muse. This was Bob Dylan.
I should have seen that one there.
Oh, cool.
Damn.
And
I can't catch everything, Rex.
Trying really hard to think of what to write, you know, and it's so frustrating because it's like about a mythos that like I really enjoy, you know, Egyptian gods and music and all of the right ingredients were there for me to find inspiration, and I'm just sitting at my keyboard, you know, just being like, "But the song is beautiful, and I really like Egyptian mythology, and the sky is really gorgeous," and just not finding it. So at some point, it kind of felt like I was just like begging the body of a deceased muse to try to get something out. So that's kind of what this ended up being about.
I like that. And I like that you use the clever reference to the six muses. You know, and I totally relate. I mean, there are lots of contests. Like even your contest that you're running right now with these in the song lyrics. I'm not a fan of K-pop. I'll admit that. That's probably no big surprise to anybody who knows me. But I really like the lyrics, and I really like the quotes in your contest. But, yeah, sometimes it's just liking something isn't enough. Like, you have to get that muse to cooperate. So...
Incense.
That's very cool. Oh, what's that, Rick?
Thank you, guys.
Incense.
Oh, burn incense?
Absolutely.
I like burning incense. Nice and relaxing. And hey, if it, you know what? If it doesn't bring forth a right, at least you got time to relax and your room smells good. And nobody will be able to tell that you were smoking pot. So,
but
it's a win-win situation.
Even if you were.
All right. What do you got for us next, Rex?
Her Birthday by Isabella G. And it says it's got a SoundCloud, but you didn't note it.
I completely forgot, yes. But I don't want to, you know, I apologize to Isabella G. I forgot to get the SoundCloud in, but I really don't want to carry it over for another week or two. So if you don't mind, just go ahead and assign a reader.
Well, this one's on you, I guess.
Uh-oh. All right. This is Her Birthday by Isabella G., and it goes like this. She cried herself to sleep that night. They all seemed to forget what day it was again. She lay there wondering, tears streaming down. Does anyone actually care enough to remember? She drifted off into a dreamlike state where she could no longer feel the pain. He was there waiting for her to return to the realm, dripping blue goop every time he moved. She was excited to see a friendly face again, having his tentacles wrap her into a hug. He smiled and handed her a gift. It wasn't much, but it made her heart flutter. She cried herself awake and smiled because finally someone remembered her birthday. End poem. And she put in her AN, I wrote this poem based off of my sister because her birthday will be on November 12th, and she feels like we always forget her birthday. And I would like to say happy birthday, sister. I'm not quite sure where Isabella lives, but I know that as it gets closer to holiday season, like Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, all those holidays that come between November and January, birthdays tend to get overlooked. So, you know, it can be a difficult, you know, to have one of those near the holiday birthdays when everybody is so busy. But I think, you know, and like I said, I just didn't want to hold this off anymore. You know, and I'm so glad she wrote this for her sister. I think it shows how much she, you know, cares. I also like that she wrote for her sister, but she wrote it to the picture. Like, she incorporated her sister's feelings, like the bit of reality, her sister's feelings, her love for her sister, but she incorporated it with the picture and put a bit of fantasy in here. The whole idea of, you know, that friend that, it's kind of like the idea of, to me, of making friends with the monster in the closet. And to me, I think that's just absolutely delightful. And again, I say happy belated birthday to her sister. And thank you, Isabella. Gee, you have a good heart. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
I kind of like that second to last line. She cried herself awake and smiled. Quite the turn of thought. It's usually cry yourself to sleep. This one cried herself awake and smiled, so there's a note of happiness that's right in that. And the thought with he was there waiting for her to return to the realm, dripping blue goop every time he moved. Boy, that kind of paints on that notion of the invisible childhood friend, one you take to your dreams with too. And but does walk on that the last one in the litter, so to speak, and there's so much other stuff going on that she kind of gets left. And they are from Tejas, so happy birthday down there in Texas.
Oh, there you go. Yep, yep. Happy birthday to, in Texas. And, yeah, great comment, Rex. I like how you mentioned the cry herself awake gave note to that kind of that happiness that moves you to tears. So great observation and great comment. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. I mean, it's sad. And yet it's almost to me about finding like happiness within yourself. You know, even though she's clearly dreaming, you know, it's not something that's happening in reality. She's at least able to console herself. It's like having an imaginary friend or just remembering that you care about yourself. I did really like the line, she cried herself awake, and that the ending two lines kind of match the opening two lines. Like it's a complete story, you know, starting with she cried herself to sleep that night. They all seemed to forget what day it was again. And then ending with she cried herself awake and smiled because finally someone remembered her birthday. You know, there is definitely a sense of melancholy to it, but it's not entirely. Yet it doesn't really escape the melancholy either because the reader is aware of the fact that the blue goop man or in her dream is, you know, not in reality. It's not an actual person. You know, but at least she's able to console herself in a way. And hopefully
Absolutely.
When she wakes, she's not re-slammed with the realization that, you know, Goopman isn't real. Hopefully he's real enough. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I thought it was melancholy pretty.
I have to agree. That's a good word for it. Melancholy pretty. Very well said there. And, all right. What do you got for us next, Rex?
Senseless by Mandy, 42. And Babbler, why don't you read that for us?
No problem. This is Senseless by Mandy 42. Hooked like a bone witch on the shell of your back, I drift on your symphony, soundless. From the forest fog to the oceans, within I drink your tonic, cleave at the lips of your split tongue kiss, but you slide inside, touchless. I breathe bouquets from the spine of such sin, and I find the spice, scentless. I feel the aura on your other world wings, but my form stays fetal, sightless. So I angle my lantern in the cave of your mouth, and you swallow my sixth, senseless. End poem.
Great read there, Babbler, and just an amazing write by Mandy 42. Her ability with imagery and metaphors just absolutely just intrigues me and really grabs my attention. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, got to go with the ease on this one. The single N words for each line, each stanza, and the fact that she walks on all of the all of that which reels within our senses, from listening to tasting to touching to smelling to seeing, and then offering up that final note of the sixth sense less, just swallowing the cave of your mouth. I thought that was a nice touch. Kind of it rolls out the nice thought of the picture itself in a clever way, but also adorns it with each flavor of our senses. So it hits very nicely, and it also kind of tells an oddball story to that motif in the picture itself.
Yeah, you're right. It does. It has had a nice oddball story that goes with the picture, and I too like how you mentioned that each different senses is missing. And I also found it pretty intriguing how in the end she separates sense and less. Instead of making it one word, she makes it two words. I thought that was really cool. And yeah, there definitely just is that whole feeling of just losing, you know, the grabbing away, I don't know if grabbing away is the right word, of those, the slipping away of those senses. So great observation there, Rex. And Sadler, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. It's like this weird, sensual, yet almost Arkham Horror-like, like giving...
Arkham, I like that.
Like giving up of one's senses one at a time. Like knowing that you're caught in this kind of foreboding, ominous lure of this creature, and yet you're still caving in and giving in to it. Losing your senses one is by one as you experience them. You know, it starts with hoof bone, which on the shell of your back, you know, caught, trapped, you know, but it, and while it sounds somewhat involuntary, it's almost like hypnotic, sensual trance. You know, the phrasing here, there's kind of a disturbing sensuality to it. You know, I drink your tonic. I cleave at the lips of your split tongue kiss, but you slide inside, touchless. You know, there's something sensual about that, and yet also foreboding and disturbing. And just the idea of being consumed in this trap until you have no senses left. I found it very interesting and intriguing.
Absolutely.
Like deep sea biology-like in some ways. I enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, I have to agree. And I like how you describe it as, you know, this kind of disturbing sensuality. And I have to agree. It is, like you said, there's this that kind of almost hypnotic, like a person who has no control. I really, like, hooked like a bone witch on the shell of your back. Like the whole idea that of almost like being trapped. There's almost something about it that makes it, as you were talking, Babble, as you were commenting, I started to think, it kind of makes me think of Stockholm Syndrome. And you're right, there is some great science-type references here, like where she mentions the anglerfish at the end, like, you know, so I angle my lantern in the cave of your mouth. You know, that whole idea of just being drawn in by that light and not realizing what's behind the light. I also like the use of the split-tongue kiss. You know, again, a dark sensuality, but the split tongue really focuses on the idea of the butt viper or the split tongue that says one thing and means another. So wonderful comments, both of you, and just an excellent write by Mandy42. Very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Theremin by Manuel. She succumbs to the darkness calling in the midst of silence. Deaf ears ring from the thunder of blood pumping in engorged veins. The wan light of candles melted to stumps open her blind eyes. Hands tied together in supplication for prayers, often unanswered. Listen, listen, the reaper comes, whisper hollow-eyed children. She raises her head, smooth as a babe's, sniffing out the reaper and his metallic scent, crouching, hiding, doubling over, but he still finds her deep in the cochlea. And poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex, and just an excellent dark write by Mamya. And Babbler, your thoughts on her poem?
I feel like this one kind of rides adjacent to the previous one in quite a few ways. Just the idea of being this image must really just bring out like the strange lure.
I think it did.
But I mean, hey, so we're good. Again, the touching on the senses, you know, the succumbing to the darkness, calling in silence. I think there's a lot of playing, especially on sound and sight. You know, the deaf ears ring from the thunder of blood pumping in engorged veins. You know, the wan light of candles melted to stumps opened her blind eyes. You know, like praying here not to die as you're being like slowly devoured by this creature, like almost, you know, half senseless and kind of merging with the being, and then looking out like at death, like sniffing out death, and until he comes, you know, until finally death happens. Again, weaving a pretty dark in this kind of slow, almost passive death, you know, like imagine like I in a like keeps them alive while they're being devoured kind of feeling. So I found it very fascinating, very interesting. I wonder if the play, especially on the sense of hearing, I believe the art is called cochlea, which probably, you know, is making people think of like cochlear, which is like related to the ear. So, but
yes.
I love the piece.
Oh, I have to agree. And I like how this, you know, like you said, it kind of almost has that kind of dark sensuality also. But then there's also how it touches, I like how you mentioned how it touches on that loss of the senses, like deaf ears ring from the thunder, and how there's kind of this sense of someone being submissive to death. It definitely was an intriguing rite, and I think when this guy ran this contest, this was the piece of artwork that was written most to, like it really seemed to speak to people. So excellent observations there, Babbler. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
It's the fear in that which is coming. She succumbs to the darkness calling in the midst of silence. She understands that it is coming. It's walking its way towards her. And it does hit on all five senses again, just like the last one. But it hits more on the sort of, as Babbler said, to sound, the sort of deaf ears, the sort of the blood pumping. And then, again, hands tied together in supplication for prayers, often unanswered. So there's that note to praying to your God for relief or maybe not yet, so to speak. And then the offering in that next stanza, listen, listen, the reaper comes, whisper hollow-eyed children. So there's that note of ringing death again. It's endorsement of that which is coming. And the thought, head smooth as a babe's, kind of hit on that. It's on that notion of one who has been through a lot, probably chemo, and sniffing out the reaper, and his metallic scent. It's on that notion of blood in the moment, and still, Babbler hit it, the thought with the cochlea in the last. Even though it's deep, she's gone deep into herself. He still finds the whispering in that notion of the ear itself. It is time.
Absolutely. Really well said there, Rex. And I like that your observation about the second last stanza. And that makes a whole lot of sense. There's the idea of somebody who's been through chemo, you know, dying of cancer and, you know, like as you mentioned, hidden inside herself, but still death finds her. I really liked this all the way through, but I do really like deaf ears ring from the thunder, blood pumping and engorged veins, and listen, listen, the reaper comes, whisper, hollow-eyed children. And there's something about bringing children into an already dark light that makes it even darker, as if you could almost feel as if her children are gathered around her bed as she's praying these unanswered prayers. And in that moment, her family are all gathered around her, realizing, you know, that death is coming, that there is no escaping from it. So just really a wonderful emotive rite, and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Sexy, Not a State of Mind by Lafayette. And you got it.
This one actually should be read by a male, so I'm actually going to toss this one to you.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Sexy, Not a State of Mind by Lafayette. Dishy drips, uncaged, lick your skin, create a climate broadcasting to all. Ensnared by sexy, not an evil within, you say, it's a state of mind. Fool, it's not a cat call. Sad for any who think for a second, it just comes from underskirts and mental thoughts. Ensnared, never to forget, feeling a check-in, she seeps, spouts, spurts. The smell of her skin behind her ear owns you. The piercing look from warm, nervous, dominating lures. The tilt of her shoulder, head, could turn you blue. The smile, so hypnotic, so carnally lusted. So sorry you never felt, so sorry never encountered. So sorry you think mental, so sorry you're incomplete. Sexy is her whole package. Have you seen that nose, those cheeks? Sexy is her robust hips. If you've been there, you've been leaking. Her voice, the star, with words or not, she needs it not. Her voice, the star, post-physical love, her power increases. Sexy is not easy. Sexy is natural to her. Sexy is effort. Sexy is awareness. Sexy is accepting. Sexy is electric. Sexy is risky. Sexy is naughty. Sexy is slow. Sexy is teasing. Sexy is animalistic. Sexy is smelly. Sexy is overt. Sexy is sublime. Sexy is getting it. Sexy is nowhere close to a state of mind. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And this was originally written for the Art of Seduction show, where it was bold and confident. And he wrote to the quote, sexy is a state of mind. And obviously, well, I'm going to comment first, because obviously his poem was a counter offering, a counter thought to the quote. Now, to me personally, the quote wasn't dismissing any part of physical attraction, but rather saying, you know, that sexiness starts with your state of mind, starts with how you feel about yourself. And we should include the mind as part of the overall attraction to a lover, to another person, or even how we feel about ourselves. Because so oftentimes you can be the most beautiful physically beautiful person in the world and hate yourself because the mind plays those kind of games. And other times, you know, you just see somebody and they're not necessarily the most physically attractive person you've ever seen, but they have something, and that's where that confidence starts. Now, I actually did like this poem because I consider myself to be a fairly open-minded person, that when somebody has a different point of view of me than me, you know, I want to make sure their voice gets heard. However, obviously, I'm not going to find it. I'm not going to be turned on by you arguing with me in your poetry. So you're going to get moved to a different show than The Art of Seduction. So my suggestion is to anybody, if you write for my Art of Seduction shows contest, that you find a prompt that turns you on, that you find a prompt that moves you centrally and write to that one. I do like how this is a very raw sexual energy to it, in that he reminds us that there's so much to appreciate physically, not just the physical appearance of the hips and the breasts, but the way a woman's body reacts to the touch of a lover in the moment. And how her voice, the star, post-physical love, her power increases. So just really some wonderful, thoughtful lines, and very well done. And Babbler, your thoughts?
So I took this as love, like sexy is not a state of mind, sexy is physical, but not necessarily someone who's physically attractive, like not like a conventionally attractive so much as the just the physicality of it. I guess when I read sad for any who think for a second, it just comes from underskirts and mental thoughts. That if the only sexual experiences that you've had and been in your mind, that you're missing out on the physicality of love, like in love making and that sensuality, like the sex of it. Especially when I read, because the things he's describing aren't necessarily the, like, oh, well, she's got to be super hot. It's finding aspects of a person that are physical, attractive, you know, the smell of her skin behind her ear, the piercing look from warm, nervous, dominating lures, the tilt of her shoulder, head could turn you blue, her smile. Sexy is the whole package, her nose, her cheeks. And I think he even puts in here, sexy is her robust hips, because he's not, I think he's trying to indicate that he doesn't just mean people who are conventionally attractive, that it's really just
right.
more about being lost in the physical act, you know, the voice, the smells, the sounds, you know, just all of that physicality. I will say just from a personal standpoint, feeling sorry for someone, you know, that's a weird kind of pity that I don't think anybody really needs,
right?
You know?
I have to agree. I have to agree.
Yeah. You know, it's just a bit look down on your nose on other people's preferences and sexual experiences. You know, if they haven't experienced this, maybe they don't want to.
Absolutely. We all make our own. Yeah.
At least for this narrator, really? He's all about the physical act, which, you know, hey, if that's what you're into. So,
absolutely. Absolutely, I have to agree. And hey, you know, we all of us who have tried it, most of us who have tried it also appreciate the physical act. So, you know, I can't say that that's completely wrong. So, but really great comment there, Babbler. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, there's deliberate in here. You hit sort of a. It's not a cat call. It sad for anything for a second just comes from underskirts and mental thoughts. So there's a deliberate notion behind that before he gets into the thought of her. And then the angle here in the middle, which Babbler hit on, so starry, that is also deliberate. It hits on that notion of feeling sorry for someone who can only think singularly instead of walking out the whole rounded notion. So the essence is one who is actually not engaging themselves on a more, instead of a mundane level, a more thoughtful level, or one who's just looking, running up the catcall angle, but never indulges in any frame of angle that does completion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. And all right, what do you got for us next?
Isis by T. Perry. And that one's yours. So there.
All right. And this time I won't argue with you. All right. This is Isis by T. Perry 898. And it goes like this. Passion, betrayal, a thirst for adventure were given free rein in this tale of intrigue. Anonymous drifter with no fear of censor was trapped by desire and wrapped in fatigue. A promise was mentioned, deception, the stranger would tempt him with glory, imprisoned by greed. The prize would yield nothing but sadness and danger. A hunger may grow from a small blackened seed. His goddess forsaken, the quest soon unraveled. Two shadows emerged in the black of the night, disheveled, enveloped, bewitched, and bedazzled. The pragmatist traveled from darkness to light. Redemption would whisper, a kiss was envisioned. From blackness to sunshine, our hero was led. Sweet love was remembered, his heart was imprisoned. He rolled without sleeping, in need of a bed. Kind Isis was waiting, all-seeing, all-knowing, and tendered her virtues with continence fine. Her dark eyes were flashing, her red hair was flowing. Contentment would shine at the end of the line. End poem. I really liked that one. I thought, just as always, just impeccable rhyme and flow, just beautifully written. And Rex, your thoughts?
Walks more along that theme of Isis in the Egyptian myth and legend, trapped by desire, wrath, and fatigue. The thought of being tempted with glory, imprisoned by greed, deprived of the nothing but status and danger. There is that note of that which you can't have, but then you hit on that thought with his goddess forsaken, the quest soon unravel. And there it goes. You get that angle of being paced across the world for this and that, and to bring it home, that which you're charged with, in order to find Isis offering up her benevolence upon you.
I like that. I like how you mentioned the benevolence, and that how it touches more on the idea of the worship of the Egyptian goddess Isis. And I think that's one part things that intrigued me about this as a prompt, is it was a story with a moral, and it also had kind of a Western feel to it, but at the same time, it had that references, especially the title, to the goddess Isis from ancient Egypt. And a bit of a trivia fact, this song, and they mentioned she was born on, or not born, but they were married on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, is actually one of several references to Mexican culture made in songs on this album by Bob Dylan. So just a little tidbit there. Great comment there, Rex. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this piece. It's a fun read because of the rhythm and rhyme structure is very tight, so it makes it kind of it feels like an easy read. I did really enjoy that, yeah, it does tap into the actual Egyptian mythology. Isis is the goddess of healing and magic, and the wife of Osiris, who is the god of the underworld and death. So I found this kind of interesting at looking at it from that perspective, kind of this person being lured in and they're exhausted and tired and hungry for an adventure. And at the end of the road, kind Isis was waiting, all seeing, all knowing, and tendered her virtues with countenance fine. Her dark eyes were flashing. Her red hair was flowing. Contentment would shine at the end of the line. So it makes me think that, this weary traveler going to die, and find death. But, who's beside death but Isis, who brings healing and contentment. So I thought it was a nice play on the Egyptian mythology. And I think it also went really well with Bob Dylan's kind of Western style poem as well. Because, again, we have this road weary traveler kind of pushing themselves to the edge. I think my favorite line in the whole thing was a hunger may grow from a small blackened seed. The idea of something sprouting from a seed being a not good thing, a greed, like a hunger, I found very fascinating, and I felt like that was a particularly strong line at the end of that stanza. So I enjoyed this piece. I thought it was
absolutely
an easy flow.
Yeah, you're right. And it does have that nice, easy flow to it that makes it enjoyable to read. And sorry, I'm typing at the same time. Yeah, some powerful lines in here. And you're right, he did also kind of have that Western feel that comes across in Bob Dylan's song. I particularly liked the lines, "The prize would yield nothing but sadness and danger. A hunger may grow from a small blackened seed." And "redemption would whisper a kiss was envisioned. From blackness to sunshine, our hero was led." I liked that thought there. That there's that idea of redemption, that idea of healing. So I thought that was very well done. And just to let you know, Rex, I sent Joe a link to your rhythm and rhyme contest, because that one definitely needs rights. More than Sterling, although of course if she wants to write for your Rod Sterling contest, both are awesome contests. Just throwing that out there. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
"Let Me Come Home" by Martha Gethel. And Babla, would you do us the honor, please?
No problem. One second. Loud room all of a sudden. Is it on the board? Did it just get buried?
Oh, let me drop it again.
Yeah, it got buried.
I'm like, I'm hunting.
Hang on, I got it.
Okay.
There it is.
All right, thank you. All right, this is "Let Me Come Home" by Martha Gettle. "Baby, I came back to find that love I left behind. Darling, I can't get you off my mind. I hope I didn't waste too much time. Baby, please look at me. See, you are all I ever need. I'm sorry I thought I had to leave. I'll do anything you please. I'm sorry I left you all alone, but my heart brought me home. Darling, I can't make it on my own. I promise I'll never again roam. I learned a lot while I was away. Please tell me I can stay. My heart belongs to you. What can I say? I love you more every day. I'm sorry I left you all alone, but my heart brought me home. I know I can't make it on my own. I promise I'll never again roam. Please say there's no one new. You still love me as I love you. I will make all your dreams come true if you let me come home to you." End of poem.
Read there, Babbler, and just a wonderful heartfelt write by Martha Gettle. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, hope and a thought to redemption, because it sits on that notion of just walking away and then wondering, the grass ain't so green on that other side of that fence. And what's this? I know I can't make it on my own. I'll promise I'll never again roam. There comes a time when that it kind of walks as a reality check. Yeah. I shouldn't have done what I'd done, so I hope there's a little something left in your heart to forgive the fact that I walked away.
Absolutely. Maybe. You know, and sometimes there is. Sometimes you just have to accept that there isn't, but I like how you mentioned that this touches on redemption and the idea of realizing that you made a mistake and you're hoping that there just is that something left in the heart, so just a really excellent comment. And Babbler, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I know Martha usually sings them, but I don't know the melody, so so I'll just imagine it was a sweet folksy song. I mean, it was clearly the remorseful wanderer, right? The person who left a relationship or cheated or, you know, it's left vague enough so that the person listening can kind of put in their own storyline. It's like, well, I done messed up, you know. What I had was a lot better than what I have now. And it's the plea
it's the plea to come, please let me come back. And I think it's kind of playing on the prompt of Bob Dylan's song, you know, where he's trying to come back and maybe, you know, believing wasn't a good idea. And there's a plea upon the return. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was a, you know, sweet but short kind of lyric, right? Nice and clearly communicated.
Absolutely. I have to agree. I do like how the way her songs, how she clearly communicates. And wonderful comment there. And I like how she really zeroes in and narrows in on that one section, on the whole thought of, you know, going back to a lover, going back to someone, a relationship, or trying to go back to it. And, you know, saying, you know, I'm sorry, I was wrong. And I like how in the end she says, please say there's no one new, you still love me as I love you. You know, that idea of just hoping that, you know, the dreams can come true. I also like the chorus, you know, darling, I can't make it on my own. I promise I'll never again roam. Really a nice tight rhyme and flow there. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Deserted Desert Oasis by Kel, and that one's all yours.
All right. Deserted Desert Oasis by Kel Smiles. It goes like this. Flying over hot sand on buggies made to glide over desert dunes. Miles ahead, a sage oasis blooms. Sand-encrusted buggy driven with an unrelenting thirst bloom through my throat, and I ride. In the front dune buggy, my guide, the crusty old man with supplies, chatted up the route the whole time, his voice carried on the wind's tide. She followed, keeping him in sight, since he was helping me find my guy. My muslin caftan rough on burnt skin, but thankful to the cloth on my head, protection from hot sun-blowing sands. I'll find him so he will pay for his sins. My guy doesn't know I carry a gun. I have decided if I intend to kill him. I haven't decided if I intend to kill him, especially a man of exquisite talent, not to mention awesome endowments. His mouth and hands inspire decadence. I want him despite his entanglements. Ahead the oasis wavered in the distance, difficult to tell though through the mirages. Cruising beside Tariq, he exclaimed, only one man, more dunes, were well-aimed. Nervous anxiousness began to set in. Soon we approach our destination. An oasis gleaming in sun's radiation, I saw him again, a palm's inclination. My earlier decision quickly changed. I ran to him looking for any damage. Tariq watching through me deranged. An unfamiliar grin covered his face. A passionate kiss we quickly exchanged. Kneeling by his side, I examine his frame. Lips unlock, I smack his handsome face. You left me alone in that strange place. He laughed and his fingers traced my face. Let's get out of here, we'll be disgraced. Suddenly we remember we shared the space. Taking my gun, shot the guide twice. Oh, my. Well, end poem. I have to say, that was just, you know, I really enjoyed that storyline just because you just never freaking knew what was going to happen. It kind of left you in a bit of a suspense there. There's a really great build-up and twist at the end. Very cool. And Rex, your thoughts?
Double a twist. I thought she was going to kill him. Instead,
no, did
he
I?
Just falls into his arms. So, killing off the guide. Yeah, well, now you're really going to be on the run because it'll take a while for that body to syndicate. There's nothing out there to feed on it.
Right. I thought the same thing. I mean, my goodness. Well, I think what that shows us is the kind of like when you're crazy. Attracted to somebody, it doesn't make you not think right, Because, yeah, definitely killing off the guy when you're in the middle of the desert would not be a smart move. Yes, great observation there, Rex. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I gotta agree. The twisted storyline was kind of fun. You know what it reminded me of as you were reading it, is that old movie, Two Mules for Sister Sarah, with Clint Eastwood and Shirley MacLaine.
Oh yeah.
Where he's guiding the nun with the gun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Through the desert. I couldn't help but think of that movie as I was listening, because I'm like, where is this going? She's got a gun, and I'm like, is she going to kill the lover? But I always wondered if there wasn't some kind of double cross coming. But I enjoyed it. It was a really fun storyline. I feel like it fit that kind of Western vibe, although this felt it married well the Western vibe with the Sahara Desert feel, you know, the ISIS meets the West.
Yes.
Storyline, because the name Tariq and the description of the desert and the clothing is all very Saharan, you know, Middle Eastern, Northern African. But the storyline feels very spaghetti Western. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very creative, and it was very entertaining to read. So I thought it was a wonderful piece.
I have
piece.
To agree. Oh, what was that, Rex?
The Road to Morocco with Bing Hope and Bob Hope and Bing Crosby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like that thought.
Because Bing always got the girls, and he always got the garbage.
Yep. Yeah, I really liked her storyline and the way it twists, and like Babbler said, the way like East meets West and the spaghetti Western feel. And it did have that kind of like old-time movie-type feel to it. So really just a very entertaining write and very well done. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
She Could Not Hold On to Me Very Long by Kenny W. What I'd always wanted was a life less crazy. Way down in Woodstock, my Egyptian goddess and me, we got married on holiday further down in Mexico. She bought me a ring, but that wasn't necessary. For a time, for a while, I was the husband and father, but something was missing. Oh, something was wrong. Woke up some mornings with the blues calling for me. Also, I needed my solitude. I needed my song. Snuck out one cold night in the drizzling rain, took my motorcycle, my guitar, and best amplifier, drove off to the Big Pink, the band's hideaway, and knocked on their door, didn't mean to defy her. We played for 10 days down in that basement. I knew right away I could not live without it. I could not return, felt I could not go back on my dying day. Sarah, I'm sorry, guess you knew right away. We all buried the blues, we buried the hatchet. Music purely forgives, music proudly gives forth. Robbie, Richard, and Rick, Gareth, and LaVon. Nobody died. We all knew what it was worth. I did return to the homestead. She knew it was over. I loved them so much, I didn't love them at all. The poetry and music within me is so much a curse. We held it together to the following fall. This was the love of a god, a life of a troubadour. He was out on a limb. He was out of his mind. Genius, like tinnitus, beats heavy on the brain. It's the story of Dylan's life. He's one of a kind. Isis, oh Isis, he was a mystical child, but she could not hold on to him very long. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I have to say I really enjoyed this write by Kenny and how it paid tribute to not just Dylan, but to the life of the musician, the troubadour in general. So I thought that was very cool. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I enjoyed this, you know, the struggles of an artist, you know, someone who's compelled to create, even if part of them wants something else or something different or something mundane, just the constant push to create, you know, whatever that may be, in this case music, you know,
And unfortunately, if you're with someone who's that's not what they're looking for, then the lifestyle is not going to be compatible. You know, if you're looking
Absolutely.
For the 9-to-5 guy, that's just not going to match up, and it just isn't. You know, so I believe in divorce court, that's what they call irreconcilable differences. I liked it. I liked the kind of more personal and modernization of Bob Dylan's song, and the look at, you know, what that means for a musician and a lover. And so I thought it was
Absolutely.
A great write.
Yeah, I have to agree. And I like how you mentioned that the modernization of Bob Dylan's song and how it relates to the idea of how the musician, the artist, who is not that 9-to-5 person, and if you are that 9-to-5 person, it might be something that doesn't work for you, something that you can't hold on to. So really just great comment there. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Kind of hits me up with that, what's his name? The country guy. His guitar and his weed is all he needs. Hey, don't worry about the music. I can think another seed. I can't remember who it is.
Willie Nelson?
Yeah. Kind of walks along the same track. Because this hits
I like that thought.
Music and the poetry. But with Willie, he was free to let his music burn up in his house when it burned down. But his guitar and his weed were more important because, that's according to him at least, I can always write more. So this kind of walks on that same note, but in a different tone. You can't tie down because there is too much that needs to come forth. And if it's tied down, then it doesn't get to give birth. It just kind of, it gets squandered and kind of dies on the end note of that which one is not attuned to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great observations there. I like that. And just a really excellent write by Kenny W. So very well done. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
The One Who Believes by Mindful. And this one's for Babla, please.
All righty. This is The One Who Believes by Mindful. I remember that brightest of spring May days when death she came a-knockin'. I was drunk on love's sun-fed brilliant rays while I stood on my very own coffin. Too blind to see all this that did greet me, too proud to see the shining truth. As quickly as life embraced it did leave me alone with my confusion and youth. But as I dismounted that shiny box, I realized I stood on a tomb. I'd cut all my ties, loves, and locks. I was finally free of the womb. But all the time seeking, I did not realize that love and life grew further. So many times I gave half-hearted tries, only to see the love leave with another. The day came I found myself all alone, while a lady wept softly nearby. She wandered with tears and without a home. All day and all night she did cry. The next morning I still heard her soft sobs and asked if she needed an ear. Just realize that time eventually robs and you'll be all alone in nowhere. With that I decided my life needed change and I began to give all that I received. I knew there'd be joy along with some pain, but it's now shared with one who believes. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Babbler, and just a beautiful, thoughtful write by Mindful. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Kind of hits on one who didn't really give much of anything for anybody except himself until he realized later in life that thought would stood on my very own coffin. There is that notion of understanding near the end of things, well, maybe not, maybe just middle age going up, and that, there is that notion of actually sharing with somebody instead of finding oneself fully alone because, hey, nobody cries for you if there's nobody there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like that how you mentioned that idea of somebody who only thinks about themselves, and when the end comes, they find that nobody's there. So, wonderful observation. Well said. And Pamela, your thoughts?
I enjoyed this piece. I mean, it had a really good flow to it and a nice rhyme scheme to it. I also was intrigued by the fact that there is, like, multiple realizations and growths in this. You know, it's kind of marked as like a death and a birth. You know, they remember the brightest of spring May days when death came a-knocking, drunk on love's sun-tent brilliant rays while they stood on their very own coffin. You know, they're youthful and hopeful and, you know, not realizing that they're very close to death, you know. And then as quickly as life embraced, it did leave me alone with my confusion and youth, you know. So, like, it's like a first love, first relationships that just get, like, devastated. And then realizing that you're bitter, you know. You cut all your ties, love and locks, finally free of the womb. So you're like, well, I'm just not going to love anybody then. You know, love hurts. It sucks when it doesn't work out, and I'm not doing that. And then moving on to, like, well, this loneliness, you know, that realizing that being alone isn't that great either, you know, and that every attempt they actually had made was half-hearted. They'd never really poured themselves into trying to be in love and what that means and caring for other people until they see another person who's, like, nearing the end of life or in a later stage of life is just devastated by their loneliness. And realizing that, like, that could be me. It's almost like a, oh gosh, my brain is forgetting, a Christmas Carol kind of with, like, a Scrooge, you know?
Yeah.
Seeing what the future might look like for you and how crappy that is. And fortunately, you still have time to learn and to change and to have the empathy to see yourself in someone else's shoes and realize that, hey, you know, those really are the same dang boots.
Absolutely.
And deciding to change. So I thought it was an interesting story of growth. It kind of plays with concepts of life and death. Where you came from, where you are, where you're going. Great,
yeah,
right?
I definitely have to agree. What's that, Rex?
I didn't say anything.
Okay, I swear I heard your voice. Must be hallucinating. Okay. But, yeah, I like what Babbler and you both had to say. There really is a sense of growth in this, that realization that you can't push love away, that you have to find the joy and the pain in life and embrace them both. I really was intrigued by it, but as I just found that shiny box, I realized it's too on a tomb. I had cut all my ties, love and locks. I was finally free of the womb. That whole idea of somebody realizing that they're all alone, that they're on their own, and that there's no one to hold on to. I really thought this was beautifully written and very well done. And I'm not going to try to have us force another writing comments in. The last ones will be carried over to another show, and I'll let people know which one. What I want to do is use this last few minutes to, let people know about contests and shows that need rights. So let's start with you, Babbler. What do you and Aphasiana have going on?
So right now, both Aphasiana and I have contests open. We're kind of doing a joint one. So there's the entries for my contest, which is based on RM, who is a lyricist, rapper, and musician for the band BTS, which is a K-pop band. Don't feel like you need to be a K-pop fan. The lyrics are pretty universal. Go ahead and give that a perusal and see if there's anything there that you find inspiring, kind of looking for introspective rights.
And then there's also Contest Faziana that is open as well, that we're kind of jointing from. Oh my gosh, I'm trying to find the link to her contest and I'm failing.
The Dickinson quotes?
Huh?
Dickinson quotes, Emily Dickinson?
Yes. So she's pulled some quotes from Emily Dickinson that also to find inspiring, somewhat introspective writes. And both of those are for the Parts Center Parts show that's going on tomorrow. So
very cool.
Feel free to
very
take
cool.
a look. Again.
And Rex, you have a couple contests up. Tell us about that.
Yep. Sundays from Wednesbury to Detroit is all a matter of blues. It's on Joanne Short Taylor, a blues girl from middle of England who is now in Detroit, setting the blues scene on fire because she's good. Got a voice kind of like Janis Joplin, but a little bit more refined, and she plays a really mean guitar as well.
Yes, I listened to that. Good stuff.
And on Tuesday, we've got Vast as Space, Timeless as Infinity, Rod Sterling quotes.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to both those shows, and I highly recommend people check them out and see if they are inspired. Now, surprisingly, I only have one contest running right now. I don't know how that happened. I know, right? Like, what the heck? How does Pam only have one contest running? But it is a contest that needs rights. It's for the next Twisted Tuesdays, and it's quotes and artwork by Norval Morisot, who was an Ojibwe Canadian artist who was actually referred to as the Picasso of the North. And if you look at his artwork, you'll definitely see how he got his name. And that is one that needs rights. So, you know, make sure to check out all the contests that our hosts and hostesses are running and the topic boards and late night poets and see what inspires you. And, of course, now I'd like to say thank you to Rex for always being an awesome co-host. Thank you to Babbler, Randy, and Tom for calling in. And, of course, Babbler for seeing the whole show. Very cool. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who is listening now or listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And thank you to Fill My Eyes for all that she does in the background. And I've had a lot of fun tonight. It was a great show. And thank you, everyone. And good night.
Night, gang.
Thanks for having me. Have a good one.